Hello and welcome to Tactical Startup. I am so excited for this week's guest. Bill Hauser is a mentor of mine, and he is the CEO of SMB Team. He's a speaker. He's newly married. He's a husband, marketing magician in his words, and dirt bike enthusiast. In the last 4 years, Bill has scaled his law firm growth company, SMB Team, to 300% year-over-year growth. But it wasn't always that way. Bill's entrepreneurial spirit was influenced by the 2008 recession that hit his family's business like a ton of bricks. With no shield or plan to protect against the crash, his family quickly lost everything. Filing for bankruptcy and eventually resulting from his parents' divorce, from those trying times, Bill set out on a mission to recession-proof each and every business he could touch so that no business owner would ever experience that same pain again. The SMB Team is the fastest growing business growth company in the legal industry, providing cutting edge digital marketing services, premier legal marketing coaching, and industry shattering online education. Servicing hundreds of clients in the legal industry, the SMB Team's mission is to help 10,000 business owners 10x their businesses. You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We'll have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Bill, welcome. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm pumped for this, Taylor. Let's dive in.
Great. So the podcast is named Tactical Startup, as we've discussed before, but you, having been one of my mentors for a little while and coach, and I wanted to have you on to help my guests because I feel like that there's a gap between where people are and where they want to be, and you've definitely helped me see that. So I wanted to pick your brain and have you influence and give my listeners the opportunity to impart your wisdom. So while go.
Yeah, that's kind of my default mode is just go. So I think I'll give some context first, and then I'll kind of go into some of the key beliefs I think that most business owners I think miss when it comes to, you know, reaching a goal. I mean, I think that's what I've been trying to figure out and reverse engineer is what's the difference between setting a goal and reaching a goal, right? And I think that we've fallen in love with this. I get goosebumps actually when I say this right now. I have goosebumps on both my arms because this is it. I mean, if we could just learn the ability to set any goal and actually have the goals we set turn into reality, you know, we wouldn't have, you know, world starvation. We wouldn't have, you know, infectious diseases spreading across the world. We wouldn't have a lot of problems that are encountered across all areas of the world. And it comes down to a lack of ability for especially business people to execute. And I believe business people have the biggest opportunity to change the world because they're able to generate net profit. And net profit is something that is a result of value creation. So a little bit of context, you know, I'll kind of start with my own self-discovery journey. I'm 30 years old. Maybe I'll say 30 years young from now on, but 30 years young. And, you know, in our, you know, I've been in business for 4 years and 3 months now. And, you know, this year we've already surpassed 44 full-time W-2 employees. We're about to breach the $20 million mark, in annualized revenue as a company. And it didn't start there though. It started, like you said, with the 2008 recession, causing my family to go bankrupt. My dad almost committing suicide. My mom actually left a suicide note, which I found in my computer room. And all of this hit me all at once. And I went through just debilitating anxiety disorder for 5-6 years where I couldn't even walk down the sidewalk without thinking people are going to pull a gun on me, to the point where the only person I was really talking to throughout the week was my psychologist. And it went from that to me becoming completely fed up with tolerating negative emotions and negative thinking patterns. And I read this book called The Linden Method by Charles Linden. And it was this book on how to basically turn your anxiety into fuel. And I didn't believe it. It was the first time I ever pulled out my credit card and bought an online training course. I thought it was a ripoff. And I read the entire thing start to finish, and it taught me this practice called diversion. And it was the practice of taking your mind off of anxious thoughts and redirecting them towards empowering thoughts through the use of quality questions. So instead of saying, I don't have enough money, changing phrases like I don't have enough money into how can I generate enough money, right? And that changes your reticular activating system, which changes what you focus on, which changes your emotional state, which creates a positive chain reaction, right? So basically through learning the art of diversion, and then I eventually picked up the book, Think and Grow Rich, I started realizing that I could not only overcome my anxiety, which I believe was ailment oriented, meaning I was trying to overcome an ailment, right?
Right.
And a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous and drug addicts go through this where they believe that their entire life purpose is to overcome drug addiction. And I think that's a pretty limited view of life. I think that at some point we have to rise above our ailments, the things that we think we need to solve, and we have to go to life enhancement, life optimization, and high performance. And so when I picked up the book Think and Grow Rich, I learned the psychology of success from Napoleon Hill, and I started replacing my quote-unquote ability to divert my attention from my anxious thoughts to how can I become wildly successful, you know, and right. how can I shorten the distance between my goals and making them reality? And that was really what triggered the whole process. You know, I then went to yellowpages.com, became number one sales rep there, which is really funny. Everyone hated me there because I was really loudmouth and all over the place like I am now.
No.
Not you. So, yeah. Fun stuff there. So then quit that. And then I decided to start SMB team because I didn't believe in their product. And now, you know, 4 years, 3 months later, here we are. And it's been the most humbling self-development journey. I can't, I always joke, I can't believe I get paid to go through like this grueling personal development journey that I'm on, which is so fun and so exciting, but it's constantly staring my habits in the mirror and constantly asking, am I the type of person who deserves the goals that I want to reach? So I'll pause there. I just wanted to give some context, but I want to transition into how do you actually generate whatever it is you want in your life. But I want you to, kind of drive the interview. So go ahead and take it where you want.
So I actually sold ads for Yellow Pages myself. I was, but it was a lot longer than that ago, back in Yellow Pages heyday. And it was, I hated that. It was so bad. They were so... Anyway, bad sales techniques, bad sales, like just
grindstone.
Yeah, it was terrible.
So unethical. It was so terrible.
It was. And people, I didn't like it. I didn't last long, I'll be honest with you. Like, I thought, like, because we went through their whole training system, which was really actually pretty good. You know, they put us up in hotels and you know, we had all sorts of stuff and that was crazy. But yeah, I didn't last long because it wasn't where my heart was, right? Like selling people advertising in a Yellow Pages was not my idea of a good time.
I'll give you a quick story on that to follow up. Like when I won President's Club, I got number one sales rep there. I quit like 3 days, 3 or 5 days after because I had this flood of guilt go through my body. And I was just like, I succeeded at the wrong goal. Tony Robbins has this saying, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. And I definitely felt like a failure after having that success because I pursued the wrong vehicle.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great lesson. Success without fulfillment is failure. Wow, that's powerful, right? I mean, like, really, I think that's, you know, success-driven, purposeful success, right? Like, that you're not just looking for the money, but you're looking for the purpose that goes with the money. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs get caught up with the idea or the dream of money, right? Like the idea that, oh, I can work my flexible, or I can do it when I want to do it, or I can do it how I want to do it. And they get caught up in the romanticism of it without the planning part of it and or the fulfillment part, right? Like if it doesn't fulfill you, if you don't enjoy what you do, then why are you doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's so important. Like people, you know, it's like, especially when you give, did you watch the We Crash? Have you seen that on Apple TV?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's about WeWork and
Adam Newman. Yep. Okay. I did watch that.
Yeah. It's very powerful because it goes through what he did and his eccentricities and just everything. And, but the problem was, is that his company, while had a good intent, I believe, you know, fulfilled purpose, like with WeWork, at the end of the day, you know, the money talks, right? Like and the investors looked at it and said, it's a property management company. Yep. And you want us to value your property management company at $47 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, and unfortunately, you know, that was what he was hoping and dreaming for. And it didn't ever end up that way. What, like, okay, so the legal industry is exceptionally hard. Like, I mean, there are, because of the regulations for advertising and just everything to go with that, why did you pick such a hard niche? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. Why go there?
Yeah, so here was a couple of beliefs, and just I'll give a little bit of an explanation there. So our company, we made a very bold claim in our early days that we were just going to specialize on specifically service businesses, which I was scared about originally. And then we eventually transitioned that to just law firms. And I can tell you this, as soon as we cut out all other service businesses, our business exponentially grew because there was no confusion in our marketing. Right. So now we do lawyer marketing and coaching. Eventually we're actually in the process of spinning off new companies within our ecosystem. Now that we have a big leadership team, we're able to consider, do we want to spin out a just PPC management company for all verticals? Or do we want to just spin out a service business coaching business that can be ran separately using our proprietary systems? So we're looking into that now, but we quite frankly don't need it to even go to, you know, 50 million. So the reason we chose legal as our specialty niche for marketing and coaching is not as heartfelt, I think, as most people want it to be. It was a very analytical decision. Partially, some of my first clients were contractors. They wouldn't pay their bill. And that's primarily because the contractors that we signed up, we found out after the fact that they have much lower profit margins than a law firm, right? So the average construction company has half to one third the profit margins of a professional services practice, especially a law firm. So when I was deciding to go all in on law firms, I found this tool that's called IBIS World, IBIS World. And I bought this very expensive report from IBIS World, actually bought a subscription to it. And I looked up and I compared all these different service verticals. And we found in an analysis that, you know, law firms were a perfect sweet spot because of the average net margin of a law firm and their need for demand side advertising with the inability to cold call or outbound market for most practice areas. So it created this very extreme need for exactly what we could offer, which was primarily demand side advertising at the time, which was Google Ads in our early days. That's all we really did.
Right.
And over time, what happened, which I think was really interesting, was we kept listening to our market and we didn't tolerate that our specialty was just PPC. And we kept innovating. And that was really the needle mover to our success, was we kept innovating our product. We didn't right. just say, oh, I'm a PPC specialist, I'll just do that forever until I die and just do PPC right. for lawyers. We kept listening to our market and we did more analysis. I read this very thorough report from Vendasta, which studied 200,000 different marketing agencies or something crazy, and had this big report on where do advertisers spend their dollars for businesses doing under $5 million a year. Looked right. at the report. I saw, wow, the average law firm, which would fall within this bucket, is spending X on Facebook, Y on Google, Y on YouTube, or Z on YouTube, et cetera. And we had this whole formula that we essentially created. And we said, instead of me having to convince people that they need more PPC, which right. I felt was not really the right thing because it shows purchase behavior showed something different. So we decided to design our product according to what our clients actually needed. So we had to look in the mirror and look at what our strengths were. And then we had to find partnerships where our strengths were not. And that's where we ended up partnering with Andy Stickle, who now is Chief Marketing Officer of SMB Team. And we ended up bringing his company under our umbrella because he had a strong suit in SEO and in right. Facebook ads and all these other areas. And it's just a seamless fit. Now that's designing our marketing services side. Then there's the whole coaching side, which is right. now a very large part of our business. And the reason for that is, again, we listen to our market. The lawyers that we were generating leads for were complaining that they didn't know how to scale their business into the leads. They were like, I don't know how to hire sales staff. I don't know how to give up my intake work. I don't know how to run my firm. I don't know how to set goals. My head is spinning off. Please help. So instead of what most marketing companies do is they go, you're not getting an ROI because you're not picking up the phone, right? They defer blame. Right. We said, okay, wait, we don't have to be a marketing company. Who said I have to be a marketing company?
Right.
Let's become a marketing and coaching company. And that became the biggest innovation that has ever occurred in our company. And since we made that decision, not too long ago, I mean, if you look at our P&L statement, it's hockey stick growth ever right. since we found a true, not a marketing gimmick, okay, blue ocean offer. I'm saying a real blue ocean offer.
Right.
Once
right.
we found a true product market fit that truly solved, instead of 5 needs of our clients, solved 25 needs of our clients, it's easier to sell. It's more profitable. It's easier to grow. And we've found a place where now people imagine it.
Sorry, could you say that again?
I'll say it again.
Gotta love Siri.
Yeah. So now our clients actually want the combined package of what we have. I mean, who would have thought? Most people sell something that people don't actually want, and that's lack of product market fit. And
yeah.
if you read any books like Blitz Scaling or Masters of Scale by the founder of LinkedIn, these books all talk about how the most successful early tech founders, they listened closely to their market. They even watched over their shoulder as they used the technology that they created. They looked at, where are they getting confused on my software? They really listened to their market.
Right.
They innovated. And then after they innovated, growth occurred.
Right. I think it's there's so much wisdom in what you've said, like really, because one of the things that people have this great, and they'll come to me all the time because, you know, I help them start their businesses, right? That's what I do. And they'll talk to me about this brilliant idea they have. And I'm like, okay, maybe, right? Like, have you done any market research on it? Have you done any type of, is there a demand for it? Did you ever watch Big Bang Theory?
Yeah.
Okay. When they tried to develop that app and they're like, well, there's only about 5 people in the entire world that would want this app. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and you're like, we'd have to sell it for $1 million a person in order to get any type of return on this. So you're like sitting there going, well, then why do it? Now, if you just want to do it for doing it for sake and it's a passion, that's one thing. But if you're actually trying to make a living out of something, you have to have people that want to buy your services. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just expect to have a product with nobody that's interested in it. or one person in the entire world and make a living off of it, unless it happens to be Elon Musk with Twitter. And then you could maybe do it. But as far as that's concerned, so, and then the next part, sharing that you listened to your clients. What do they want? What is it that they're struggling with? Having that foresight, because I know a lot of times people will just like, Steve Jobs, for instance, with the original iPhone, right? He wasn't listening to the market. Otherwise, he would have created a better BlackBerry, because at the time, BlackBerry was the thing to have. But what he did do was he made the iPhone as a software-driven, which could then be iterations instead of being cut from the hardware that the BlackBerry had existed in, you know, previously. So in that way, while he didn't originally listen to, and he was his own man and did his own stubbornness, he eventually the market moved the iPhone from this very niche device to, the most prolific device in the world's history. More iPhones than Androids are being sold all the time because of that. Yep. So, so what is the profit margin, by the way, on law firms versus construction companies? I'm curious.
Yeah. So, I mean, according to IBIS World, it depends dramatically on line of business.
Right.
So it depends on the type of law firm and the size of the law firm. And it also buckets in the insurance facing side. So the statistical average, when I looked at it, I believe was 20%. Okay. And it was like 5% on average for construction companies or something like that. And then when you go into individual verticals, like PI as a specific vertical, the right. margins can go up to 35% on average. But again, that depends on size. It's really fascinating. I highly recommend everyone looks into IBIS World to just see summarize data about your industry. The right. insights you'll glean from it are resounding, and a lot of people don't do market research. It's also the key to marketing, right? I mean, you know this. You're making a ton of YouTube videos right now. Listening to your market can give you insights around content areas that people aren't fulfilling. And it's the same thing that creates success in marketing that creates product market fit. And you know, when we talk about, you know, Steve Jobs, for example, who I just read the book, The Innovation Secrets of Steve Jobs, which is a amazing read, highly recommended. There's a difference between listening to your clients,
right,
and listening plus skating to where the hockey puck will be.
Right? I was actually just going to say that Wayne Gretzky, right? Like going where the hockey puck's going, not where it's been.
So when you listen to people's concerns, when people went, like Henry Ford, for example, when people went, I don't really know if I don't like X about the horses. I don't like Y about the horses. I don't like Z about, so he thought, well, there's this and there's this technology coming, there's this. What if we solve that problem through this?
Right.
And most of the multi-billion dollar companies that change industries, they're the marriage of consumer need plus trend.
Yeah.
So if you think Amazon, right, Amazon got their timing right because they hit the dot-com bubble trend perfectly with a market need. Most times, the reason businesses don't blitz scale, that effortless exponential scaling, is because they didn't hit the timing part. Nine right. times out of 10, they hit the need part, but it's just not the timing isn't hit.
Yeah. Well, and I think that part of that is that they're not prepared at the right time, right? Like there's both sides of it. There's the timing of the market, but if you're not ready for it, then you can't fulfill it either. So it's kind of like it's a double-edged. You need to be paying attention to that sort of thing too, right? Like you can't be just, oh, I'm going to do my thing and then hope for the best, right? Prayer, thoughts and prayer market and marketing or thoughts and prayers business. While I am not, you know, debating the value of faith at all, but at the same time, you know, a good plan helps, right?
Yeah.
Like so many people forget, you know, I'm in a lot of entrepreneur groups and I cringe because everybody wants success, but nobody wants to plan for it. You know, and they
talk about that?
What?
You want me to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Planning? Absolutely.
Yeah. So here's kind of like, I completely agree with you. I mean, here's the, here's the different thing I did. So when my family went bankrupt in 2008, my biggest frustration was this Goodyear-itis, where my parents, at the end of each year, they'd meet with their accountant, and they would basically ask the accountant whether or not it was a good year. So I was literally in the accountant's office multiple years when my dad would ask, was it a good year, Tom? Right? And he literally didn't even know his numbers. He didn't have a plan. He was okay with just doing the same revenue numbers he did last year. And it became this very complacent style within his business, right? So when I saw that happen and then us go bankrupt, I had a epiphany when I started SMB Team that I want to do the complete opposite. And I created this 10-year financial plan in an Excel spreadsheet with every year's revenues pre-planned out. And I said that I wanted to do $256 million per year by 2026. And when I told people this plan, every single person, except for my mom, every person but her laughed at it. And my wife, Emily, she also didn't laugh at it. That's why I ended up marrying her. But long story short, that plan is still something 4 years, 3 months into our company, we still run on. It's still what we refer to for financial decisions, for scaling decisions. And so what that is I call it a P&L projection sheet. So a lot of people say, I want to do $1 million. I want to do X. I want to do Y. And then my first thought is, great, where is that documented? Right. Is that documented anywhere? Is it broken down by month? Are these wants, or are they commitments that you're willing to do whatever it takes for, right? So show me what you have written down as your marketing budget for each month throughout the next 5 years, and I'll trust your hope and pray goal, right? But most people just have hope and pray goals, like you said, you know? And so what I do is this is a difference. I decide what the revenue goal is going to be. And then once I've come to I've become resolved around that decision, it's easy to spend what we spend on marketing. It's easy to hire the amount of people that we've hired, because it's going into something that I have faith behind, which then leads to the concept of the vivid vision, right? Which we run our whole company on now, is our 3-year vision document that's in a PDF. And we use that in our recruiting process. We use that when people get off track and we have to give them a redirect in our team. We use that to make strategic decisions as to where we want to go as a company. We use it for every decision we make as a company. It's as important as our core values, right? So the vivid vision and the annual plan are two ways to actually plan for the success of your business, right? And then from that, the next complaint, once you've gotten clear on your 3-year goals, your annual plan and that P&L format, then here's the business owner excuse, Taylor. It's this excuse right here that holds people back. Yeah. It's, okay, I have my goals, but I'm overwhelmed. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to focus on. It's this distraction, overwhelm, toleration. The word I just use is toleration. You're tolerating the negative emotional state of overwhelm. I don't tolerate overwhelm. Overwhelm is a habit. Okay. Like, if you are clear on what you have decided to do, it is impossible to feel overwhelmed. I don't feel overwhelmed because we break our annual plans down to quarterly boulders, right? And I don't call them rocks. The book Traction calls them rocks, because we set quarterly rocks for quite some time in our business, and they worked, but they kind of, when we're growing really fast, they became just that. They became little rocks, you know, little rocks.
Right.
Right. And I needed to make a culture statement in the company that when we set quarterly goals, they're not just little rocks, they're boulders. I mean, they're big, juicy boulders that we cannot move. These are unmovable objects that must be accomplished, right? That we got to carve away with for the entire quarter, right? So now we call them quarterly boulders, and we have anywhere between 3 to 7 of them company-wide for the entire quarter. We have them broken down for each department of the company: sales, marketing, fulfillment, et cetera, right? Then we also have individual quarterly rocks, we call them, not boulders. We call the individual goals of each person on the team their individual quarterly rocks. So when everyone on your team has a clear quarterly goal, when your company has 3 to 7 clear quarterly goals, and they all ladder up to your annual plan, which ladder up to your 3-year plan, it's impossible to feel overwhelmed. And I think that's the best way, that's the best chance that anyone has to reverse engineer a vision into reality, is those 3 practices.
Nice. Now, I know one of my favorite things is that you talk about, and I wanted you to go into this, like the difference between, you call them EOPs, not SOPs.
Mm-hmm.
And what is EOP?
Yeah. So let's talk about what it's not. Yeah. Right. So everyone goes, oh, okay, this is another excuse why I can't scale my business. Oh, Bill, you don't get it. I need to get my processes in check. Okay. That's what I need first. No. First of all, that is an excuse. Right. Okay. Getting your processes in check is a people problem. You shouldn't be the one creating processes for your business. You should get someone who's very process oriented. You go be the entrepreneur. You go get the attention. You go build a brand and hire someone to be responsible for the processes. So most people get this wrong because they're guilty to delegate. So that's right. A whole different thing that we can go through. Okay, standard operating procedures is the way people express their need for processes and systems in their business. So they say, I need SOPs, standard operating procedures. So one day, someone on my team was talking about an SOP for like something like how we build websites or something like that. And we were like, needed to improve this part of how we build websites. And one day I was like, you know what? Do we really want to call these the word standard operating procedures? Were you put on this planet to be just standard, right? And every time I ask that question, people go, no, I don't want to be normal or standard and live a normal life, right? So one day I just decided, you know, we're not going to refer to processes in our company as SOPs anymore. We're going to refer to them as EOPs, which stands for excellence operating procedures. Right? Because right. You want to be a Super Bowl winning team, you can't have SOPs, standard operating procedures. If you want to win the Super Bowl, you need excellence operating procedures. So I'll give you an example of an excellence operating procedure that we're rolling out right now so that there's meat and potatoes to this.
Right.
For our sales processes, right? We want to build a team of multi 6-figure earners who work on our sales team. I want the best of the best. I want people to interview the people on our sales team on every podcast in the world because they're known as being so amazing. That's the standard I want, right?
Nice.
So how do we create that standard? Well, we create that standard by what we reward and what we penalize, right?
All right.
So you're required every day to do daily training if you're on our sales team or client experience team. You're required every day to do daily role play. You're required to make a certain number of contacts per day. You're required to follow up with people X number of times, et cetera. There's a whole list of 7 different specific items that we have in our EOP for any client-facing role in our company. Now, that's one thing to have the standard, right?
Right.
I should say, sorry, the excellence operating procedure. but if we have no protocol behind what happens if it's not followed, it's not real, right? If you don't show up to practice 7 times in a 90-day window in the NFL, you're gone.
Right.
There's no question, right? So if you miss our practices 3 times in 90 days, it's a verbal warning. If you miss them 5 times in 90 days, it's a written warning. If you miss it 7 times in 90 days, you no longer have the opportunity to be a part of our world-class team. It's very simple. So that is an excellence operating procedure. With clear penalties, clear requirements, and demanding excellence. And if you're just okay, you know, Netflix has a great saying, adequate performance gets a generous severance package.
Yeah.
Adequate performance, if you're performing just adequate, you'll get a very, very generous severance from us. But you need to part ways if you're doing adequate, because here's the thing. Sometimes we'll have people who go, we had some people on our team at one point who went, oh, Bill, I went above and beyond for X, for this event we did, or for this, or for that. And I never really react. I mean, I compliment the team all the time,
right,
like up and down. But I don't really react to stuff like that because you're expected to go above me on a Super Bowl team. Like if the ball gets tipped in the middle of the Super Bowl and the running back happens to be running towards where that ball is, what are they going to do? Just put their arms down and go, oh, I'm not the wide receiver. I'm not going to pick up the ball. I'm running back. No, you're going to go catch the ball and go for the touchdown, right? You're going to use your intuition and be a team player, right?
Yeah.
But people are looking for pats on the back for everything they do. But if you're a Super Bowl winning team, I don't think you need pats on the back. You should be good at patting yourself on the back. You should have mental language patterns where you're your biggest fan.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I wish people could hear what goes through my head. Like, I was in the elevator today, and I learned this from Brian Tracy, and I tell myself throughout the day, I feel outstanding. I feel high energy today. I feel great. I'm excited about going into the office. And I've had to convince myself of these phrases to stay in the high energy state that I'm in. And you know what most people say, Taylor, is they see my energy and they go, oh, must be nice for Bill. He's young. He doesn't have kids yet. He'll see, right? Or whatever, all these excuses. And they're going to see when I have kids, I am still going to be high energy because I know my habits and I know the language patterns going through my head. This has nothing to do with me. I'm only sharing this to inspire your audience that, you know, you can generate any emotion you want. You can generate any standard you want, but it has to happen within you first. It's role model leadership. You can't expect of others what you will not expect of yourself.
Oh, that's so powerful. Honestly, I've heard, and one of my favorites ones, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary is a little extra, right?
Yeah.
Or is extra. Right. I mean, and so many people are looking for extraordinary results without extraordinary effort or they're and so they're trapped in this mindset of, oh, I can't. Right. Well, we all struggle with things. That's not the point. Right. Everyone has a thing that they struggle with. It's not that you can't. It's that you won't. There's a difference. And so
let me give you an example.
Sure,
can I give
go ahead.
One? Yeah. So today I'll give you one quick example. OK, we just added an amazing new member to our team who's right on my energy level, which I'm pumped about. And you can probably hear me right now. So we were just in our office. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a sales call with someone.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was trying to show him what unreasonable action is. Not reasonable, unreasonable action. Okay. So the call ended and the person did not sign up with us. Right.
Right.
So I sat in the room with him and I said, great. And I thought through, what are all the unreasonable things we can do to follow up with this person? Well, one thing the guy said, I have a meeting coming up and it's at 5 p.m. I would like to talk to you as a follow-up from this call. And the call was at 3 p.m. So he's basically saying, call me back in 2 hours.
Right.
And so after the call ends, I said, great. If you're serious about calling him back at 5 p.m., send him a calendar invite right now. Send a calendar invite right now. Okay. So boom, he sends him a calendar invite. Now pull out your cell phone, send him a personalized text video right now and say, hey, thanks. You know, I wanted to thank you so much for the call we just had. Wanted to shoot you over this video. I just shot you a 5 p.m. follow-up calendar invite because I'm so excited to talk after your meeting to get something rolled out for you. Super excited. Look out for your calendar invite. I have a Zoom link in there. We'll talk then. Right. Boom. Then after he sends him the text video and the calendar invite, added him on all social media platforms, sent him a direct message on each social media platform, sent him a follow-up email with an agenda for the calendar invite, okay?
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, this guy who was passively trying to get off the phone, not sign up with us, he now has a calendar invite, an email, social media ad and message on every social platform, and a video text from that one person.
Right.
How is that going to stand out compared to the average person who will end a call and go, the call kind of went good. I think they liked me. I think we're going to talk at 5. I'll maybe kind of follow. I don't want to be pushy though. Right. Yeah. And like you said, the difference between extraordinary and ordinary is extra. Are you willing to go that extra mile? And this applies to every role within a company. Like I want a dream team culture. And that requires proactive thinking. Sorry, if you can't think proactively and solve problems before they're problems, that's going to be a problem. right? So don't blame it on your personality index. Don't blame it on your Myers-Briggs or your Colby or, oh, I'm not good at innovative thinking. You better figure it out if you want to be on a dream team. Like, no one's going to give you the roadmap. So we try and scare people off all the time in our interviews. We're like, you know, hey, if we throw you into the fire, how are you going to respond? We want to see them squirm, right? I asked this person we're interviewing the other day for a sales role. I said, okay, I always ask this question. If you called someone and they didn't pick up, what would you do? And then she goes, I think I would check to make sure I have the right contact information. And I say, okay, great. After you know you have the right contact information, what would you do? I would ask my manager, when was the last time they were reached out to? And so I'm not being pushy. I was like, huh? And then what would you do after that? I would make sure I had the right contact info again. I was just like, what? This is crazy. Yeah, it was just like crazy. That was a complete like opposite of how I need that to be answered. Call them again, send them an email, send them a text, send them a Morse code, hunt down their personal cell phone number using a background check software. Yeah. Find their spouse's cell phone number. Like, how relentless are you willing to go? And when people watch me during my events, and I was just saying this during my coaching session earlier today with our elite coaching program, you know, when I sell during events, like people can tell I love selling because I just love selling. And most people are hush hush about it. And I'm willing to go that extra mile. I'm willing to be labeled as pushy, as a salesman. I'm just willing to be labeled as that because I believe where we're going. I believe what we sell. I believe the impact that we have. And again, this has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the fact that like 50 Cent, when he was on the come up, I don't know if you ever heard this. I learned this and it changed my life. 50 Cent said, I had to tell myself I was the greatest rapper alive until people started saying it too.
Right.
I had to keep telling myself I'm the greatest rapper alive because who else is going to tell me that? Right. Yeah. So I'm saying this to inspire, you know, your listeners to, there is no perfect time to start believing yourself. So the best time is yesterday.
Yeah.
So if yesterday doesn't exist, then do it right now.
Yep.
Believe in yourself and sell.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. So I have a good story to go with that one. So when I used to hate water, water and I did not get along. I just didn't, growing up, my parents, we were just, water was not in our vocabulary. And so I couldn't stand it. Like I literally could not stand the taste of water. I mean, you know, now it's not an issue. Like, look, I mean, this is no issue. But when, but I hated it so much that I just could, I would take a sip of it and feel, oh, I just couldn't stand it. So I started saying out loud, mind you, okay, I like water. Okay. Mm. I like water. Now, at first I knew I was lying to myself, right? Like, I mean, I legitimately knew I was lying because I hated water, right? But eventually my mind started believing it. Eventually, my mind said, okay, you like water. You can drink water. Okay, you're cool. Yeah. And then I switched from saying, I like water, to I love water.
Mm.
And that's when I started loving water, was when after, I mean, it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't like I love water the next day. Mm-hmm. I still had to get over that from like to love, right? And so now I can drink water like I drink water. But before that, I could not palate it. And literally the only thing that changed was the difference between me, that voice that was saying I hate water to I like water to I love water, right? Because water itself doesn't change. It's not like, I mean, yeah, there's some waters that are better than others, but we're not going to get into that. Generally speaking, I couldn't stand water. And I found that what you tell yourself, especially in that respect, right, it's what you believe. You begin to believe it, even if you start knowing at the beginning that it's a lie. And so you have to be careful about, one, what you're telling yourself, because if you tell yourself, you know, things that aren't true, like that really, really aren't true, not just a matter of opinion, then you can get yourself in trouble. And that's kind of what happened with WeWork and Adam Neumann, to be fair. But, you know, the other part of it is that we need to be monitoring that voice and what we tell ourselves. And the other thing was, is that when I took the bar many years ago, the big difference between people's successes and failures on the bar was the voice that they used in their heads to tell them what they were capable of. And the more negative and the, I'm not going to pass, I'm not going to do well, were the people that typically failed. And so I came up with a, what I call a bar exam success script. And it was very much like what the Think and Grow Rich, the thing that you speak about in your business, about, you know, I am, I will, this is how I do it. And so I outlined how I would do on the bar, right? Like the things that would go through my head until it manifested itself, right? Like until I became those things. Even if I wasn't in the beginning the perfect student, right? And so it truly transformed how I approached the bar rather than it just being like this, oh, I have to take this really crappy exam and it's going to suck and I hate it and I'm going to be terrible at it and all these bad negative emotions to, no, I am good at it. I see things. I am powerful. I am strong. And so that voice that goes in your head, it becomes, it isn't just manifested. It becomes real because you make it real, right? Like your eyes and your brain and your mind start believing it and it's true. And so when people think, oh, well, I'm just an entrepreneur. I can't do very good, you know, or this is the product and I don't know if anybody's going to buy it. Well, as you said, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else is gonna, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you can't strap up, that's your thing.
Yeah. So like actions speak just as loud as words, I think. And so like at some point affirmations lose their value if you're sitting on the sofa, you know, eating Cheetos all day and crying to yourself, right? So eventually your brain's gonna go, BS, right?
Right.
Where affirmations start picking up momentum and become self-policing is where you've built up such a set of actions behind the affirmations to where your subconscious mind goes, this person may be a rock star. Because they did X, because they did Y, because they did Z. So I'll give you an example of this. Like I have a goal eventually in having the ability of holding 30,000 person events. That's like one of the goals I write down every morning is I want the ability to have such a big audience to where I can have 30,000 people in an event. I believe it's what I've been placed on this planet to do and I will do it. The reason I took this event recently, which was in Atlanta, that had nothing to do with law firms. I spoke in front of 1,200 people. The only reason I did it was to support the goal that I had been writing down for months, right? Which was I speak in front of 30,000 people at my own event. I speak in front of 30,000 people at my own event. I speak in front of 30,000. So eventually my actions have to measure up to that, right?
Right.
So that's what I think is always an exciting thing is when you are obsessed about writing down your goals and affirming them, using affirmations to affirm them, your subconscious mind finds reasons to prove them right more than proving them wrong. So if you follow me on Instagram, Bill Houser Biz, that Instagram channel, I have held myself accountable to writing down my goals every single morning and posting it live because that is, I need that public accountability. I hope it inspires others, but the only reason I post me writing my goals every morning, early in the morning, is for me to be held accountable to it. It's public, it's made public. So if I skip a day, I have people message me saying, yo, what's up? I didn't get your story yesterday. Did you sleep or something? I want that. Like I remember when I did my sales job at yellowpages.com, everyone yelled at me. This is where they started hating me. We had a sales meeting and I told everyone because I wanted to succeed. I had really big goals. I wanted to make $400,000 in my first year as a 24-year-old. And my everyone but my sales manager thought I was nuts. And I remember we were in a sales meeting. It was the first few weeks there. And we're talking about how to improve sales results. And I blurted out, well, why don't you just watch everything we do for 15-minute chunks of each 15-minute chunk of the day? Just monitor everything we're doing. Are we making our calls? Are we making our touch points? What do you think all the other sales reps said?
No.
Bill.
Shut up.
Shh. Be quiet. Yeah. Don't tell them to do that. Right? And the sales manager sits back and laughs. He's like, that's a great idea. Right? And everyone else hated it. Yeah. Because hey, pressure creates diamonds. Pressure sharpens iron. Like, pressure is, if you are a high performer, you want pressure. Bring me the pressure. Okay. High pressure situation. Throw me the ball, please. Please. Right. You see that in the Michael Jordan documentary where, you know, the Last Dance, where someone comes up to him, he's in like this hallway. I think it was Rashad, the interviewer, and Rashad goes, he goes, okay, MJ, come here real quick. Last fourth quarter game, you're down by X. Who do they pass the ball to? Michael looks at him and goes, he looks at the camera and he goes, me. And he just walks away.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, you pass the ball to me. Give me the ball. Right. Yeah. Right. So most people, they don't want to be, they don't want to be held accountable to that level. I love failing publicly. It's such a cleansing feeling. There's no level of accountability. When Elon failed on his third rocket launch, gosh, was that public to a degree no one could ever understand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Gosh. He had to succeed on the fourth launch because there's too much accountability. Most of us cower down to our goals, and that's why we're afraid to be vocal about them, I believe, is because it creates that accountability. So I don't know. I see a lack of the commitment around being vocal about your goals.
Yeah. Do you ever see the movie Replacements? Keanu Reeves. Okay, well, the coach on there, it was during one of the player strikes, long story short. And he said, winners always want the ball, right?
Yeah.
Like the people that I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy being an entrepreneur myself. I mean, I'm an attorney, but I mean, I'm more entrepreneur than I am attorney, right? Like, I mean, I like the business side of things. And because I like having the ball, like that's one of the reasons why I started my own practice was because I got tired of other people supposedly having the ball and making decisions and when they weren't any smarter or better than I am, right? Like that they're not a better human being because they're in a position of that to make those decisions. They're just in a different position. And I think, you know, people that shrink from the opportunities that come from being an entrepreneur, those are the ones that go out of business the fastest, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're too busy focusing on, oh, what do I do? Or, you know, they don't have direction. They don't have drive. They don't have commitment. And so they run these issues that are mostly self-inflicted, right? I always use the bread analogy, right? You walk down the bread aisle. If you ask if you have a market for a product that's a little bit different, walk down the bread aisle. How many different white breads are there? How many different pumpernickels? How many different wheat breads are there? But there is a difference, right? So what are you going to do to be a different wheat bread? What are you going to do to be a different white bread? Whatever type of it is market that you're looking for. You picked law firms, which is, you know, like I said, it's very hard advertising with all of our rules of professional conduct and all of that stuff for advertising. It's a hard niche to be in. It's a hard niche to practice in because of that, because of those rules that exist that we can't do things, despite certain media's misrepresentations of our profession. We only have a few minutes left. What last bit of wisdom do you want to impart? Which, by the way, you've shared so much amazing information. I really feel like my listeners will get a lot out of what you've shared so far. But if you had to just nail it down to one thing, what would it be?
Speed. I mean, let's speed it up. I mean, come on. Yeah. Like condense the time frame for these goals. Like it does not need to take 3 years to do $3 million. I mean, if your whole family if their lives were on the line, if you didn't reach $3 million this year, you'd figure it out. You would do it if your whole family's lives were on the line. The question is, what's the forcing function, right? What is the back up against the wall reason you must succeed? So that, I mean, I'm writing a book right now and I keep thinking to myself, like, what is going to be the title of this book? And a lot of times it keeps coming down to, I just wanted to call it like, just speed it up. Cause that's literally what everything, I can't think of a better habit to learn than how to compress decades into days? I mean, seek mentors, spend money faster so you learn what works, what doesn't work, so you can optimize faster, like hire people faster, fire people faster, like do everything. That's my internal timer. Just do everything faster and you'll learn faster, you'll progress faster, you'll reach your revenue and profit and income goals faster. Just take time out of the equation. Take whatever your goal is and cut a couple years off of it and say, I'm going to get this done in 1 year. Right. And then go send me an email after you reach it. Or right. Just follow me on Instagram and send me a message.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, there's a, what do they say? If you want to succeed faster, fail faster is I think yeah. one of the things, you know, and I know personally that, you know, I've tried lots of things. Some of them worked and some of them haven't. I've failed faster and, you know, and the thing is that, you know, failure doesn't have to be the defining moment for you, right? Like the only true failure is when you stop trying again, right? That's when it becomes true failure. Otherwise it's learning experience, right? I've learned what works, what doesn't work. And I continue to do, I'm far from being all knowing in any category. And I think the more I'm in it, the more that I realize that I can learn and keep growing and do better and be faster. Yep. So thank you so much. For our listeners, if people wanted to reach out to you to talk about their marketing or talk about their coaching, now I know you've restricted it to law firms, but not all of my listeners are law firms. But I know that you have contacts all over the world. You are a very connected person. Where would they be able to find you?
So I think the best place is give me a follow on Instagram at Bill Hauser, Hauser, Biz, B-I-Z. On there, you can, you know, follow me, DM me if you have any questions. If you are spending over like $5,000 a month on your marketing, I would say that you could reach out to us because our team is always willing to help. We again, like Taylor said, manage the most competitive niche of all online marketing, which is law firms. So we know a lot about different hacks and ways to optimize businesses marketing. So you can always go to smbteam.com to that's SMB small medium business team.com to reach out to us and see if we can help. Other than that, attend our events. So we got some huge name speakers. We got Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful at our next event. We've had, you know, I've interviewed Gary Vaynerchuk, Jocko Willink, Grant Cardone, Brian Tracy, Michael Gerber, Emmett Smith, probably missing a lot of people right now, but we've interviewed a lot of amazing, amazing business thought leaders. So would love to see you on our shows.
You definitely have. Any chance you'll get Russell Brunson on there? Mark Cuban?
Yeah, we've put, so Mark Cuban declined us, yeah. Because he's a billionaire and he doesn't need to do it. Russell Brunson, we've emailed, we didn't get a response from, because he sells primarily to coaching entrepreneurs.
Right.
So he it's not his right fit market, but we may be able to get him one day.
Okay.
We have a lot of mutual connections, so.
Yeah. I was going to say I'd love to have Russell Brunson on. I'd love to see him on, so. Yeah. Bill, thank you so much for being on and we'll talk to you later, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Thank you. Well, that was Bill Hauser from SMB Team. He is fantastic. Like, honestly, like, I'm sure you've heard him through me, my voice, my just everything. He exudes his inspiration. He's very inspiring. And so I would encourage you to reach out to him. And if you need help, he's one of the most authentic people I know. He definitely does not pull the punches. And so I highly recommend working with him. He's someone that I work with personally. So please reach out to him and thank you. And don't forget, as always, when you're trying to grow your business, think tactically. Have a great one. We'll talk to you later.